Very nice. Welcome. So, getting ready for a nice adventure next month. I recently got myself a new domain name, which at least I think is very clever. I don't know if other people will think. I think it's quite a cool domain name. So it's called Shunyaversity. Shunyaversity.com. So Shunya means zero, as you know, and Versity is from university. And so for me, the idea of Shunyaversity is that most education is about accumulation, making yourself better in some way, next level, next thing. And for me, Shunyaversity represents the journey towards zero. Something has to balance, right? For all the accumulation we've done in our life, something has to also take us the other direction. So Lao Tzu says that the scholar every day, you know, learns something new, adds something new. And the practitioner every day empties himself, herself, a little bit more. And what are you emptying yourself of? You're emptying yourself of the notions you have. The notion you have about yourself, about the world. Does life really need your notions? We have to really think about this. Sometimes we assume we can't live our life without our notions. But you know, there's an intelligence that it operates. When you sleep at night for those 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, yeah, all your organs are functioning, your breathing is happening. It's all happening, right? So it's wonderful to realize that there is intelligence of life that is operating. You know, I'd gone to Korea some years back, and I was taken to a spiritual center, kind of like a monastery. And the lady there was very inspiring. She's the main teacher there, had been born in an extremely rich family, extremely rich, one of the richest families of Korea. And then there was some upheaval. I don't know what happened, but in Korea, there was a massive upheaval. There might have been a war, or I don't know the exact circumstances, but her family lost all its wealth. So they went from being one of the wealthiest families to being complete paupers. And it was even worse because, you know, when you're that rich, you really have no skills to speak of. All you have is money. So her father didn't know how to make any money. He was heartbroken and everything. So they were just living destitute lives. And she was a very tiny little girl at that time. And one day, I think she must have been 6 or 7 years old, she just decided she doesn't want this anymore. So wherever they were living in some shack, she just left and she just walked into the mountains. And for the next, I forget how many, it was 12, 15 years, she just grew up alone in the mountains. The true story, eh? She grew up alone in the mountains. She'd sleep with wolves. She'd get warmth in the cold Korean winters. The wolves would give her warmth. And she figured out a way to eat pine nuts or whatever that she would get to eat on the forest floor. And she honed her instincts to be completely one with nature. And she talked about how there was a time when it was completely dark and she was walking and suddenly her body stopped. And she's like, why is it stopped? I mean, but her body won't move. And then she feels around right in front of her cliff. It's so dark, she can't see a thing. Her eyes can't see the cliff, but her body knows. So that's the extent to which she had tuned in. And she said, this is the intelligence. I should be dead. I should have just walked into that cliff and fallen and broken all my bones. So there was an intelligence of life that took her out of that shack where her family was living horrible lives and go into the forest and just live and become one with nature. And she's one of the most powerful Korean teachers, Dharma teachers. And of course, her students had all kinds of miraculous stories to say about her. But I just love that incident which she shared about how she had just trusted so much. So this is not coming from cleverness. This is not coming from books and teachers and YouTube videos. This is coming from the intelligence of life, becoming one with the intelligence of life. So to me, this is what our light body activation course is really about this. It's actually about, it's not about the next thing, the next level. You know, there's a beautiful word in Buddhism. It's called opanayiko. Opanayiko. And it's one of the qualities of the dharma. Opanayiko is, it's leading you inward. Not leading, everything in our life leads us onward. You come for one, then they'll say, not come for the second one, not come for the third one. Well, this is the basic level, not come for the next level. Everything you learn, it's like the next level, next level, next level. But opanayiko is not leading you onward, it's leading you inward. In other words, the next step is within this step. Like the next layer of the lotus is within this layer of the lotus. Very beautiful. So that's a beautiful quality. So in other words, what we are seeking is not the next thing, but it's within this thing. And we have to shed, it's like this, the snake has to shed its present layer of skin to reveal its fresh, new, shiny layer of skin. So it's more of a shedding process, not of an accumulating process. Emptying oneself. Graphite, there's a lovely, one of my favorite cartoons. Mother Graphite is telling baby Graphite, don't trouble your dad. He's been under tremendous pressure lately. And dad has become a diamond. So now, because diamond, you know, in terms of chemical formulation, it's carbon. Graphite is carbon, a diamond is, but it's the arrangement of the particles. It's the arrangement of the atoms. That's what makes all the difference. So graphite under tremendous pressure becomes a diamond. It's not that it gains something more. It just reorganizes itself. So in the same way, it's this journey we're about to undertake. It's not so much about accumulation. It's more about distilling. It's more about emptying ourselves. And so within the graphite of who you are is also the diamond of who you are. But the process is not the next step, it's this step. It's an inward journey, opanayiko, leading inward, leading inward. Right here is holy ground. Right here, I shall find my sanctuary. And so I really trust the fact that, like, I'm trying to think, I should know what I'm going to do. I should know 21 days, I should know, but nothing's coming. And I think that's a beautiful sign that nothing is coming. Because it's just, you just, I just like you surrender, and you surrender to the process, I also surrender to the process. And all we do is we show up. We've decided we're going to show up 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock. Some of you are not in India, so whatever time zone you can manage, if you can show up live, show up live. If you can show up with the recording, show up with the recording. We just show up, right? No excuses, just show up. And just go through the process. Just submit yourself. It's just 21 days, submit yourself. And some kind of a cleansing will happen. Some kind of a lightning of the Lord will happen. Ultimately, it's all about igniting a certain spark within you. So that no longer are outer events and circumstances determining your inner state of being. Your inner state of being is now bright enough that outer circumstances get influenced by that. In other words, you create the culture wherever you go. I was invited to teach in a remand home. In India, it's called remand home. Juvenile delinquent home. Right? So basically, these are kids who've, like the kids' prison, basically. Right. And it's really sad when you hear about this, that there are, in our country, we have such people that they are so desperate, they would purposely make, please say it again, juvenile delinquent home. So it's a remand home, is a place where young prisoners, underage prisoners are sent. So in our country, we have people who are that desperate, they will purposely make their kids commit crimes just so they can go to a remand home and get 3 meals a day. And get some education. Of course, it's not going to be the best education, but it's going to be something, because they're by government, they have to teach these kids. that's the situation in our country. So I was sent to, so first of all, they took special permission because this was a girls' remand home. Men are not normally allowed. So it said to take some special permission to allow me in there. And this was supposed to be the worst of the worst. This is where all the other, the girls who are rejected from all the other remand homes are sent to this particular. So this is like the worst of the worst. It's like the lowest you can get. And I was sent over there. And I remember I played a little trick on them. You know, some of you have seen my photograph of the monk. So when I started my presentation, I showed them the picture of the monk. I said, okay, before I start, you should all say namaste to my Guruji. Please say namaste. They're like, yeah, you're right. But then just to show they're doing something, yeah. I said, you fools, that's not my Guruji, that's me. They're like, cha. So then I had their attention because that's what they're doing all the time. They're playing tricks on each other. So I played a trick on them. So I had their attention. So then they didn't want to get fooled after that again. So then they were very cautious the rest of the hour or two that I had with them. And so I made them say things like, how wonderful, or man chahi ho to achha, na ho to aur bhi achha. And basically, it's all about reframe, you see, because it's not the circumstances of our life, it's the story that we are telling. And I told them that, listen, I meet many youngsters your age, and they're complaining about things like internet is not fast enough, or, you know, too much homework, or whatever it is they're complaining about. But you are living in a very different circumstance. And while right now it seems like very painful, very difficult, very dark for you, the reality is you will have a higher quality of life than many other youngsters. Because tomorrow, when the electricity goes, it's not going to affect your mood. You hardly have any electricity. You hardly have any, you have one fan for the big place. to have a bath, it's like an open bath. Their bathroom is like an open bathroom. There's no privacy. Everyone has to just have a bath in their open. So for you, just to have a bathroom will be a very big deal. Just to have a fan will be a very big deal. I mean, for you, you will have a high quality of life because you will not complain about the thing most people complain about. You have seen much darker times. So my reframe for them is that right now it seems very difficult and very dark, but actually you'll have a high quality of life than other people who tend to complain. So anyway, that was my 2-hour presentation. And at the end of it, somebody had brought cake. And as it turned out, we hadn't calculated how many girls are going to be there. So we were a little short on cake, actually. But anyway, what happened was they lined up very neatly. And they took cake. And when they realized they didn't have enough cake, they shared their cake with others. And the warden there came to me and said, this is fascinating. These girls, cake is something they almost never get. In normal circumstances, they'll get into the line twice. And there's no way they're ever going to share the cake. The fact that they're sharing cake and they've not gotten into the line twice to get more cake, this to me proves your session has worked. So I know these girls, right? It's a matter of what you see. But she's saying, I know these girls. She knows that side of these girls. But I didn't, I chose to see a different side of these girls. And because what you focus on expands, because I saw that part of them is what got energized. Now, I don't know if it stayed or not, but at least for those few hours, there was a shift. Yatha drishti tatha srishti. What we focus on expands. Right. So in that difficult circumstance, in a short period of time, there was a cultural change which happened. So instead of letting the warden tell me who they are, I decided who they are. I decided to see the light in them. When you see the lightness in people, the brightness in people, that's what emerges. There's a story, I think it's a true story, about it's in a church, and this priest, he sees a man stealing from the donation box. And anyway, the priest doesn't actually say anything. And after a while, this guy's caught. And then they're asking people to testify against him. And somehow it comes up that they realize he's stolen things from the church as well. And the priest refused to press charges. He said, no, he didn't steal. I gave it to him. Anyway, for other things he's caught, he has to go to prison. But when he's released from prison, this prisoner, this guy comes straight to the priest and says, you know, you didn't press charges on me. You know, I stole from your church. And the whole time I was in prison, I kept thinking of you, that how come? Everybody else pressed charges. You never pressed charges. And I realized more than that money, I want to have that peace that you have. That I stole from you and you actually did not hold it against me. You see, that's how he created transformation. Because he saw the light in the person. There's a TED talk on this. It's a true story in Turkey. Where this businessman, he's woken up late at night. They've caught a thief. And of course, the people are thrashing him. He says, stop. And he says, young man, what is this about? He says, I don't have a job and I'm desperate. So I came to steal from your place. He says, I wish you'd just come and ask me for a job. I would have given you a job instead of trying to steal. Anyway, you're young. I don't want to spoil your life. I'm going to let you go. So everyone's surprised. What's he doing? He said, no, let him go. You're not going to press charges. He escapes. Escaping, he's sent off. Now, a few years later, this is many years back. So a few years later, the Nazis occupy that part of Turkey. And this is a true story. And so families are being rounded up. And so his family is also rounded up. And they know that how bad the situation is. So they, all of them have a secret little tablet of cyanide. So they're rounded up and they start getting thrashed by the Nazis. And the son says to the father, Father, is the time. It's the time to eat that tablet. And one person says to them, the guy who's in the thrashing team, one person says, just bear it for a little longer. I'm going to get you out of here. He says it in that local language. The others don't get it. This is the guy whose life he'd saved, who he hadn't pressed charges. And it turns out, he finds a way to distract the others, and he gets his family out. Their lives are spared. And then they somehow, with great difficulty, they make it to the US. And he becomes a super successful businessman in the US. And this is a TED talk. I have to find that TED talk for you guys. And he's sharing how you never know. He thought he was being kind to that thief. But that thief ended up saving his entire family later on. So life is thoroughly interconnected and intertwined like this. So as we, wherever we are, we just show up. And instead of doing what people are expecting us to do, we listen to our conscience. What's our conscience telling us? We listen to that. Like the priest who did not press charges. There's a beautiful saying in Zen Buddhism, love me most when I deserve it the least. Because that is when I need it the most. If you're going to love me most when I'm most lovable, then what is the big deal, big thing? Everyone can love a cute little cuddly baby, right? What's difficult about that? Can you love me most when I deserve it the least? But that's when I need it the most. In the Buddha's time, we have the story of Angulimala. I don't know if you know the full story. Most people have heard the story, but they don't know the full story. The full story is Angulimala was a brilliant student. Brilliant, from one of the top universities. Brilliant student. And his teacher loved him, being such a great student. And their love and affection for each other, teacher and student, was so great that the other students got jealous. And they decided to hatch a plot. They said, we're going to spoil this relationship. And so at different times, different students went to the teacher and said, your favorite student is having an affair with your wife. And of course, he didn't believe them. But when you hear it again and again from different people at different times, then you start doubting, acha, could it be? This one that I care for so much is having an affair with my wife. Is that what's happening? So in India, we have a tradition called Guru Dakshina. So when it's time that, you know, you're graduating, then. So Angulimala goes to teacher and says, Guru Dakshina, what can I give you, teacher? I love you so much. What can I give you? And now the teacher decides to extract revenge. He says, I want you to kill 1,000 people for me. So what? What are you asking for? He said, yeah, that's my Guru Dakshina. I want you to kill 1,000 people and I'm your guru and that's what I want. So you have to do it. And in his foolishness, see, we don't realize duty and all is fine, but higher than any outer duty is listening to your conscience. But Angulimala did not have that wisdom at that time. So he thinks he's duty bound to now kill 1,000 people. So he gets started. And he's very athletic. He's very, very, very fit. He's very strong. Let me connect my laptop. And he's killing, and but then he soon realizes, how do you keep track of the people you're killing? So he comes up with a method. He cuts their little finger off and he makes a garland, Angulimala. So he has a garland of fingers. That's why he's called Angulimala. So people forget his name after a while, and he's just this ferocious dacoit who just killed everyone who goes to that forest. And nobody can capture him. He's incredibly fast, incredibly strong. And his mala reaches 999. He's just waiting for the last person. But of course, nobody dares go to that forest because they know he's waiting for this person. So the Buddha has this beautiful practice every morning. So Buddha, it says, the scriptures say he would sleep for about, not even sleep, maybe he would rest for about 2 hours. And that's interesting. Your body actually doesn't need so much rest. I mean, the busier your mind is, the more rest you need. I've seen for myself, when I meditate, then I don't really, when I'm doing regular meditation, deep meditation, I actually don't need so much sleep. You may also find, you know, it looks like a lot of time, 3 hours of your day. But as you're practicing with us, you might find your sleep requirements change a bit. Don't be surprised by that. And we'll give you strategies for when you're feeling you don't have enough sleep and things. Anyway, so the Buddha would rest for about 2 hours a day. And there's a beautiful saying in the scriptures that every morning he would, what a lovely phrase, he would spread his net of compassion. Like a fisherman goes and spread his net to capture fish. The Buddha has a different kind of net. He has a net of compassion. Who can I save today? What an intention. Who wakes up like that? Most of us say, how can I save myself today? One more day. I hope I can get through this day without too much trouble. But the Buddha is waking up and saying, who can I save today? Now, what a profound meditation. Every morning, he spreads his net of compassion. Which beings can I save today? In most cases, those beings will find the Buddha, but that's the affinity. They will find the Buddha. But in this particular case, the Buddha realizes, oh, there is a being who is very ripe, but he's about to get in big trouble. Why? Because Angulimala's mother has now ventured into the forest to convince her son to stop all this nonsense. But Angulimala's mind is so distorted that he will not see his mother. He will see one more person to kill. That's how distorted his mind is. And the Buddha in Buddhism, there's a saying that, you know, there are pretty much everything, pretty much anything you do in life, it can be healed. But there are some things which cannot be healed in this lifetime because they're that deep. To kill your own parents is one of those. The whole world will forgive you. You'll not be able to forgive yourself. That's a very deep sanskara. So the Buddha realized that this fellow is in trouble. If he goes ahead and kills his mom, then this lifetime, nothing can be done for him. So the Buddha himself ventures out. And in the distance, Angulimala sees his mother coming. He recognizes his mother, but he says, no, I've given a vow to my teacher. And that comes first. My mother will be my 1,000th victim. But then he sees another bald-headed fellow coming. He says, ah, good. I don't have to kill my mother. Let's kill this fellow. So he goes running. And they say Angulimala would run faster than a horse. Right. So he's running. And the Buddha is calmly walking. And the story goes, for 18 miles, Angulimala, like it's almost like a half marathon. Angulimala chases the Buddha at full speed. And the Buddha is calmly walking. And by the way, he's exhausted. And he shouts. And he says, stop! And the Buddha keeps walking. And he says, son, I've stopped. When will you stop? He says, what? I've stopped here. I've stopped running. You're still walking. How can I thought you people don't lie? The Buddha turns to him and says, I've stopped harming living beings. When will you stop? And like this, little by little, a correction starts happening. And Angulimala is taken aback. First of all, he's taken aback that the whole time he was walking, I was running, but I couldn't catch up with him. What kind of a miracle is that? And then the Buddha says, pluck that leaf. So Angulimala plucks it. Buddha says, now put it back. I can't put it back. Well, yeah, anybody can pluck. Plucking is no big deal. What big thing have you done by plucking? Look how beautifully the Buddha teaches them. And of course, the foundation was very good. Angulimala had a strong foundation. So he got it. He realized that he's on the wrong path. So long story short, Angulimala becomes a monk. Next day, the king comes with a large army. It's like, not only, it's actually a special, you know, like we have nowadays, we have commandos. The king comes with his top commando, like his top soldiers. And he comes to the Buddha, I need your blessings. I need to rid my kingdom of this horrible Angulimala fellow. So give me blessings so I can go and capture him. Me and my soldiers. This is my best soldiers. We're all going to the forest. We're going to capture this fellow. And the Buddha says, all that's fine, but what if he's become a monk? And the king laughs. Yeah, he's going to become a monk. Yeah, right. The Buddha said, but what if he's become a monk? He said, Lord, if he's become a monk, first of all, he's never going to become a monk. But if he's become a monk, I shall pardon him and I shall bow down before him. So Buddha says, O king, behold Angulimala. And the king is like, oh, he reaches for a sword. They're all taken aback. But the king has already given his word. You see how smart the Buddha made him give his word. That if he's become a monk, I shall pardon him and I shall bow down before him. And he cannot believe it. That the serial killer has become a monk. And he bows down before him and he pardons him. But of course, just because he's pardoned him doesn't mean the rest of the country is pardoned him. So every morning when Angulimala goes for alms round to get food, people recognize this one. He killed my brother. He killed my mother. He killed my husband. He killed my father. But he's a monk now. So beyond a point, but they spit on him and they throw stones at him. And in their own way, they put thorns on his path. And in their own way, they extract their revenge from him. And every day he comes back bleeding. And the Buddha says, be patient, my son. You have to go through. This is what you have done. You have to just be patient. Every day he goes on arms around. Every day he comes back bloody. People have thrown stones at him. People have put thorns on his path. Comes back bleeding. And yet he never complains. But one day, he sees something which he cannot bear. He sees a woman in labor. And she's going through a very difficult pregnancy, very difficult labor. So she's screaming in pain. And this man who's been a serial killer, he can't bear it. He can't bear to hear this woman in such pain. He comes running back to the Buddha and says, Lord, please do something. This woman is in tremendous pain. Please do something. So the Buddha says, we shall do a Satyakriya. Satyakriya is where you make a proclamation of truth, because truth has power. He says, you go back to where she is and you make a proclamation of truth. Sister, ever since I have been born, I have not taken a single life. By the power of this truth, may you give birth in a very peaceful way. He says, Lord, what are you saying? You know my story. I mean, I'm the last person to say that. I have killed so many people. How can I? That's not the truth. The Buddha smiles and says, ever since you have taken this birth, the birth of becoming a monk, it's like considered a new birth, like brahmacharya. You've gone into a new way of life. Ever since you've taken this birth, have you killed a living being? He says, Lord, I've not even killed an ant. He says, yes, so go there. So this is actually a very famous chant in Buddhism. When women are pregnant, they make this chant, a very short four-line chant, where Angulimala goes there and he says, Bhagini, I forget the exact word, but he says, ever since I have become a monk, ever since I've been born, he says, if I have not taken a single life, if that is true, then by the power of that truth, may you be free from your agony. And right away, she's able to give birth. What amazing transformation. See, this is the Buddha saw within Angulimala, a saint. So this is a powerful story because many of us are having secret grudges against ourselves. That, oh, I did that to that person and that's unforgivable and that's unforgivable. But what is more unforgivable than what Angulimala was up to? Whatever you've done, however mean you've been or whatever naughty things you got up to in your life, it was not that bad. And if he could transform, if he could amend himself, certainly you and I can also amend ourselves. We're not that far gone yet. So if you've been attracted to this course, then you are worthy of this course. And there's none of you have to feel that, oh, I'm not sure. Other people here, look, they seem to have a bigger aura than I have. You know, if you've been called, then you're here. If Angulimala was called, then you, each of you can also be called. Whenever you have a doubt, you say, I'm a little better than Angulimala. Yeah. And like we said, it's the journey is of emptying ourselves. It's shunyavarsity. It's not about accumulation. So just come, and like the graphite, within the graphite is hidden the diamond. Just come and immerse yourself in this experience. Just give yourself 3 hours a day to enter the stream. It's going to be the stream of pure experience. And of course, we learn a few things and things, but the main point is to be in touch with your direct experience. That's where intuition awakens, in touch with your direct experience. Like the Korean nun I talked about, who living in the forest, her body told herself what to do. And the wolves found her to give her warmth. So let's be quiet for a few minutes. And over the next few minutes, just allow any hidden tension, at a mental level, emotional level, physical level, to just naturally discharge, release itself. And all you have to do is precisely nothing. Just this invitation is enough. Because the body knows how to discharge, the emotions know how to equilibrate. And the root of the mind is already silent. Just like it takes no effort to make water still, water finds its own stillness. The more effort you make to make it still, the more it gets perturbed. Let this body, let this mind find its own stillness without any volition, without any effort. And that familiar sense of being a person, of being an individual, of being a personality, whether or not you realize it, that also is its own, it has its own weight. It is a kind of knot, the knot of individuality. So could you be willing to allow yourself to taste something more fundamental, beyond this individuality, beyond this knot of being a person, a personality, with all your quirks, with all your preferences. So just allow yourself to look beyond the curtain of the personality. Who are you without that familiar sense of being a person, an individual, with a history and a plan? Who are you without that? And here's a powerful question. Who were you before your grandmother was born? Who were you before your grandmother was born?
themselves. All the lights to light themselves. All the doors to open themselves. All the lights to light themselves. Darkness like a dark bird flies away, oh flies away. Darkness like a dark bird flies away, oh flies away. Who is in my temple? Who is in my temple? All the doors do open themselves. All the lights do light themselves. All the doors do open themselves. All the lights do light themselves. Darkness like a dark bird flies away, oh flies away. Darkness like a dark bird flies away, oh flies away. Who is in my temple? Who is in my temple? All the doors do open themselves. All the lights do light themselves. All the doors do open themselves. All the lights do light themselves. Darkness like a dark bird flies away, oh flies away. Darkness like a dark bird flies away, oh flies away. Who is in my temple? Who is in my temple? All the doors do open themselves. All the lights do light themselves.
Who is in my temple? All the doors open themselves. All the lights light themselves. Darkness like a dark bird flies away, flies away. Who is in my temple? We can all take a few deep breaths, keeping our inner stability. If you want to rub your palms together. I want to share with you, I found the paritta, the Angulimal paritta. You'll enjoy this. Watch this. So this is what Angulimal sang when he saw the expectant mother.
Yatoham bhagini ariyaya jadiya jato Nabijanami sanchicca panang jivita voropeta tena sacchena sottite hotu sottigabhasa yatoham bhagini ariyaya jatiya jato nabijanami sanchicca panang jivita voropeta Tena sacchena sottite hotu sottigabhasa. Yatoham bhagini ariyaya jatiya jato. Nabijanami sanchicca panang jivita voropeta. Tena sacchena sottite hotu sottigabhasa.
That's all he did. That's all he chanted. So till today, they chant this. Whenever a woman is pregnant, see what a transformation. That they, in Buddhist countries, whenever someone's pregnant, this is always chanted. To make sure that she has an easy pregnancy. So from someone who took so many lives to someone who's welcoming so many lives. That's the power of transformation. No mud, no lotus. All right, I'd like to open it up. If anybody wants to share something or ask something, and if you have any questions about our upcoming course, you can. Let me just give you a chance to unmute yourself. Let's find the link to do that. Yeah, so now if anybody wants to unmute themselves, they can. If you want to put it in the comments, that's also fine. Somebody shared with me, greetings Nitya, the thought of taking away the wrinkle-free body and mind and hanging it out in the laundry line is very powerful. I just immediately feel the inner being is just a speck without any form. And if that be so, then where is the question of any distinction between me and others who have taken off their outer covering too? It is just one field, one current, and then it just stays there. Beautiful. Yeah. You're tasting it. That's how it works. That sense of I am, you know, when you take out I am this and I am that, just that pure sense of I am, that is your connection to everything in existence. Because everything in existence shares, even the table or the chair or the glass, it shares a sense of I am. Everything has a sense of Sat Chit Ananda. Sat is existence. Chit is knowing that there is existence. And in that, there is Ananda. Sat Chit Ananda. I exist. I know I exist. And in that, there is Ananda, that there is bliss. Sat Chit Ananda. This is the basic quality. Yesterday, I don't know how many of you were there yesterday. We had a session on, I was sharing how bliss is not what you expect. Bliss is not what you imagine. And what if this present experience, if you don't compare it or judge it or say, something's going to happen tomorrow. Something's going to happen when the light body course starts, when it finishes. Suppose you don't do that. Suppose you just this experience. And you meet it exactly the way it is. And then that is actually bliss. Bliss is a 100% immersion in your present experience. That this is the dream that God has chosen to dream. And you choose to like this dream. Then that's bliss. But as long as you think, no, my dream is better than God's dream. I've got a better dream. I want to live there and I want to do this. And when that happens, then I'll be okay. And how many times have you played this game? And then even when you get that, you find that something is out of place. You go to that beautiful cottage by the ocean and there are too many flies. And you're there and now, too many flies, the internet is not good enough. Delivery guy is not coming. And you're there on the beach in that cottage and something is not right. The geyser isn't working. You see that? So bliss is not what you imagine. Bliss is any experience, including a painful experience, by the way. This is fascinating. including a painful experience, if you were to surrender to it 100%, that would become a, this gives you confidence actually, that even a painful experience surrendered to becomes bliss. My friend, is Madhur here? I don't know if you're part of this. Madhur's mother had cancer, and I had the privilege of being invited to do a kind of family session. So the family were there, some close friends were there. We spent many hours just giving them a chance to appreciate her and for her to appreciate them. How beautiful that is. And so one of the things which came up, someone said that they'd taken her for a medical test. This particular test is a very painful test. And on the bed next to her was a soldier from the army having the same test. And he was screaming in pain. And she was given the same test and she was just quiet the whole time. She didn't flinch. The doctor asked her, how come you're not reacting? I know it's painful. She said, no, I'm just lying in the lap of God. I've given it to him. How beautiful. So a soldier, an army jawan, couldn't handle the pain with his housewife. I'm just lying in the lap of God. God is taking care of it. So in a way, even that can be your portal to God, to bliss. The bliss is not what you imagine. Aditi, were you saying something? Who was saying something? Zara, you were saying something? Go ahead. Mute yourself.
I was thinking of saying something. So it's great that you asked me. Nitya, I have two observations and questions. Number one is that I've seen that the person who commented saying, you know, that hanging yourself out on the laundry line, this wrinkled body, it sounds amazing. And I also feel that at an intellectual level, it sounds amazing to me. But I find that experientially, as I come closer to it, I really cling, like I feel scared to let go. So I would claim to want it very, very, very much. But as you come closer, there's definitely a lot of fear that kicks in. Because you're really attached to the form in which you've come, right? So that's one question on which it would be great to hear your observations. And the second part is that I think sitting for 3 hours, I expected for me to bring up a ton of discomfort and irritability. A ton, you know, because I don't think I've ever sat for 3 hours really focused. It's, so obviously at the end of 21 days, you'll be in a better position, but first 3-4 days is going to be hell. So any thoughts and any hacks to get through that?
Okay, so the thing is, whatever, let's just say nothing is out of place. So let's just say even that fear that you're experiencing, you know, everything has its place. That fear also was there for a reason. It was there because you were trying to protect yourself, maintain yourself. Everything in our life has, even our so-called bad habits, they're there for a reason. They're there because at some point in our life, they actually protected us or they gave us something. When we were really alone or we were really sad, then they gave us a distraction, they gave us an outlet. So there's nothing out of place. So I would not even say, now don't even make a problem out of that fear. So how fascinating, right? It's a process called the wonder method. The wonder method is you meet every experience with wonder. And you breathe, you literally breathe with wonder. You take the breath of wonder. It's like, how fascinating, amazing. And take out the word fear. It's just an energy. It's an energy that's alive in you. Like I was saying a moment back, bliss is not what you expect, right? Bliss is not what you imagine. And so if that's what, you know, whatever your age is, 20, 30, whatever it is, so it's taken you your whole life to finally have this meeting. It's a very precious meeting. And this part of you, which you're calling fear, has shown its face. It's been hiding. And it's been playing its games in the background. But now in this 21-day course, it's showing its face more and more. So can you get familiar with it instead of judging it, which is what we've probably done for a long time, and assuming it's a bad person? Maybe it's not bad. Maybe it's just quite innocent. It's just doing its little, whatever it knows best. There's a nice word. There's a healing system called matrix reimprinting, and they have a nice terminology. They call it echo. Echo is energy consciousness hologram. What that means is that you imagine your being is like an ocean. And within this ocean are many bubbles. Right. So the bubble of, like, for example, being when you had these three friends and at some point three friends decided they don't need you anymore. The bubble of being abandoned. And now again, you go to a party and you find some friends to sit with. And when you go to get a refill, you find they've gone and sat somewhere else. What happened? That same, it happened so long back, but that bubble is still there. Energy consciousness hologram. A part of you knows better. I'd say, come on, they probably, whatever they had, they decided. But that old part of you gets triggered. Right? So it's called an echo. It's an energy consciousness hologram. There's a part of you that's still maintaining the old belief system. So let's just say this is the echo, what Eckhart Tolle calls this the pain body. Right. And it's a beautiful thing. The pain body, you don't get rid of the pain body by hating it or judging it or trying to fix it. You meet the pain body with presence. The pain body just wants to be met with presence. And then by itself, like we were doing in the meditation as well, or rather we were undoing, the sense that the body knows how to release, discharge. So nothing's out of place. So whether it's pleasant or it's unpleasant, you welcome that. And about the 3 hour thing, first of all, it will not be a continuous 3 hours of sitting. We will include some movement. I'll teach you some simple exercises. We will include that. And we'll have breaks. Every hour or so, you'll have a break. So I don't think you have to assume that it'll be that hard and that difficult. You might surprise yourself. Like a lot of people, some of you were part of my solar eclipse 6 hour session. And a lot of them emailed me later, Nitya, I never thought it'd last more than an hour. And they said, I couldn't. I was surprised to find I was there for 6 hours. So you might be surprised that when your inner being is really finding nourishment, then before you know it, you know, it's like, wow, that was so quick. And your sense of what 3 hours is, that normal notion of 3 hours, that may change. So yeah, that's what I wanted to say to you guys. Vinod, you're raising your hand, go ahead. Is it by accident, Vinod? Try unmuting yourself.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Vinod, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. See, from last 2 months, I'm experiencing the beautiful bliss energy in me, beautiful, you know, happy energy. I'm very happy. But suddenly, this energy is like with me for half an hour, 1 hour. I feel so beautiful. I feel so happy. I feel so bliss. But this, but suddenly this energy changes. Then I become very frustrated. Then some fear comes. It never happened in my life. I feel like hitting my head on wall. I don't know why. Then again, in after 1 year, 1 hour, it becomes so peaceful, so harmonized. Again, this energy. I don't know why this is happening from last 1 or 2 months.
Just be quiet with me for a moment. Eyes can be open. Just recognize with all these states, the blissful state, the frustrated state, the wanting to hit the head on the wall state. Recognize that they're the part of you that knows, I am blissful. I am frustrated. I am going to hit my head on the wall. I can't take it anymore. Notice that they're the part of you that's watching all of this. And that part of you has never been affected, is not neither been affected by the bliss, nor has it been affected by the frustration. So all we're doing is, earlier our primary identity was these passing emotional states. Now that's no longer our primary identity. Our primary identity is beingness, awareness. It's called figure ground reversal. Very beautiful. Figure ground reversal. What it means is, earlier you thought, like for example, an example I give when I travel. Earlier, I thought, I'm traveling. I'm going to Delhi. I'm going to New York. But I looked at it very carefully. I said, no, Delhi is coming to me. New York is coming to me. I've never moved an inch my whole life. The whole world has been spinning around me. So you see, this is a beautiful figure ground reversal. In the same way, instead of saying, I am sad, I am blissful, you say, there is bliss. There is sadness. There is confusion. Don't say, I am. Don't add the I am to that. Well, I am is just I am. Right? So say, in this moment, frustration has arisen. And now you know, you'll stay for an hour, you'll stay for 2 hours, whatever. The way I see it, it's a very healthy thing that's happened. And in a very short period of time, a lot of things are coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. It's like a big, what can you say? Hindi mein kehte hain nichod. There's a nice ejection of the things that are no longer serving you. They're just getting out of your system in a way. Maybe that's what it is. I remember in my case, when I first began meditating, I went through a couple of years of very tumultuous emotional period. Lots of things coming and going. Very, very quickly, my emotions would change. I couldn't understand what's happening. There's some kind of purification happening. Then stabilized after that. So like we say, everything in the right place. Maybe earlier it was all suppressed. Maybe you had a false veneer. Somebody yesterday was telling me, they have a nice phrase they gave me, toxic positivity. And knowing you, maybe you also suffer from this toxic, in front of everybody, so happy, so jovial, so this, but it's covering up. It's like you're putting a newspaper over the toilet without flushing anything. I mean, you're not dealing with the problem, right? So it's toxic positivity. It is so caught up in pretending. So now you've taken out that veneer of false positivity. And now the real stuff is coming up. And it's good. It's healthy. Let it come up. Let it get flushed. And let it go back to the emptiness from which it came. So that's the main thing, is again, just stop identifying so much with the thing and identify more with awareness. And yet, it's not, I know it's an easier said than done, but this is the main thing. The main thing is just this. You come out of Shenpa into Rigpa. Shenpa is stickiness. Rigpa is beingness. And your being is always forever free. And so if it's really bad, you can say, yeah, who wants to hit the head on the wall? I do. I want to hit. Who is the I? Show me the I. Where are the I? And right away you find there's nothing there. There's all a big drama going on. There's nothing there. In that moment, when you realize it's a drama, that's dharma. When you see the drama for the drama, that's dharma. When you forget the drama is the drama, then you're truly a helpless actor in the drama. Then your sanskaras will throw you here and there and everywhere. And we're carrying all kinds of sanskaras. In fact, in my case, I'm noticing, for me, it's almost like I can smell the ego. I can literally smell it. This is the ego in action. This is the ego with its moodiness. Haan karenge, nahi karenge, will want and don't want and do this. I can literally smell the ego. The ego hasn't gone, but I can smell it. So I know when the ego is in action. And I know when present. So there's a very clear distinction between presence and person. Of course, that's also a superficial thing. At one level, it's like, how do you distinguish the image on the water from the water? Water and image are actually one. But nevertheless, it's a good thing to distinguish. Distinguish the false self from the true self. That which comes and goes. So this is coming and going. So then you tell yourself, if it's coming and going, then this is not me. This is not who I am. And you decide that this is entertaining. This is a nice drama that's going on. Free me Milroy drama. I don't have to pay Netflix subscription. This is far more interesting. Morning to evening, some action is happening. And if you see it like that, because it is an entertainment, you're giving entertainment to God, then why not you also enjoy it? If God is getting entertainment out of it, you should also get out of it. You know, this Bhakti Vedant, he went to, he was a scholar in, I think, Varanasi, not Varanasi, he was in Vrindavan. He was a scholar and he noticed Indians are getting all westernized. They're forgetting all their traditions. So he got an idea. He said, if I can make the westerners chant Krishna, then Indians will also chant. So he picked up his harmonium and he figured out a way to get a ticket to go to New York. And his ship is about to come on the port in New York. And suddenly a lot of doubt fills him up. What? I mean, I don't know anybody here. And I've come with my harmonium. What? And then he said, oh, Krishna, looks like you want me to dance. Looks like you want me to sing. Looks like you want to play with me. All right, Krishna, you play with me. You want me to sing? You want me to dance? I'm going to dance and I'm going to sing. That's all I'm going to do. And with his harmonium, he gets off and he just starts singing and dancing. And people think he's crazy. People think he's nuts. But they see he's got a kind of deep conviction. And next thing, a few people gather. And next thing, many people gather. And it becomes a worldwide movement. And he goes around the world, I don't know how many times. And ISKCON is born out of that. Something very powerful. And he said, Krishna, you want me to dance? And he was already in his 60s, by the way. He was not a young man. He was in his 50s or 60s and he went to the... And the next 20 years, he started a global movement. So many temples, so many things. And you may judge it or whatever. Everything, every organization has its own shadow. But the thing is, he allowed himself. He said, you want to play with me, Krishna? Okay, you play. You play with me. You want to dance? You want me to sing? I'll dance and I'll sing. And he sang and he danced with such abandon. Right. So that's what you say, okay, you want. So and you said, all right, God wants to have entertainment with me. Have entertainment. And just put a little padding on your wall so it's not too bad when you do bang your head.
That's a good idea.
Good.
Thank you.
I have a friend who had a spiritual awakening. It's for some of you may not like this, but she was actually in Delhi. She was getting somebody tried to molest her, and then she would not be quiet. So they began banging her head on the ground. But she survived that, and she had a major spiritual awakening. And she's one of the most powerful documentary filmmakers right now in India. So I'm saying banging the head may not be such a bad thing. I'm going to get in trouble with this. You guys are going to sue me at the end. Nithya said. What are some of the people saying here in the chat? I would like to bring my inner being to Dash so that my outer world is Dash. Please fill the most suitable word for me. No, I would say you fill it. You see, with many, many alternatives that are coming to you, try a bunch of alternatives. I would like to bring my inner being to Dash so that my outer world is Dash. Play with some words. You'll get the right word that suits you. While in meditation, is it while meditating, I think, that we naturally sleep less? And I have been sleeping, yes. That's actually true. You do sleep less. That's been my experience as well. When I do intensive practice, my sleep dramatically goes down. When I was a monk, it was actually, I would many days go with just 2 or even 4 hours of sleep. But then again, suit yourself. I mean, don't make a thing out of it. Don't make a new identity out of it. That if I'm sleeping more now, I'm less spiritual. That's not true. you just are, right? So don't get the spiritual ego around that. So when I'm active and busy and I'm thinking a lot, then I need more sleep, and then I'll just sleep more. And so it's just let the body mind do what the body mind needs to do. And so similarly in this course as well, just see how much sleep you need. Don't have fixated idea, I need 8 hours of sleep. You may need 8, or you may need less. You may need 7 or 6 or 5, or who knows. Don't get stressed about it, in other words. For me, I can sense so much loneliness these days, time and again. Maybe the inner being is looking for an element to which it wants to attach itself, such that detachment from worldly issues, family and friends is easier. Maybe. Yeah. You just notice it. This is loneliness in action. Notice that as well. You know, all of these things have to spin, and they have to just spin themselves. This ball of wool has to just keep spinning. So let the loneliness be loneliness. It's all right. There's a nice word. There's loneliness and there's aloneness. And they're different. Loneliness is being by yourself and feeling something is missing. And aloneness is being by yourself and feeling nothing is missing. The word alone contains all one. Alone. Right, so it's all right. That loneliness will transform into alone. Yeah, you're very happy. You love your own company, but not to the extent that you judge other people's company. So when other people come, you're very happy to be with them as well. Is it possible to miss the first hour every day due to job and continue the following 2 hours, then go back and listen to the first hour from recording? Will this reversing the order impact adversely? Interesting. So my preference would be you just do it. Don't play around like this, because I don't know what time you'll join. Then you'll go figuring out what I've missed. My preference would be you just do it. Maybe watch the recording in that case. Watch the entire thing. That would be my preference. But I would say that just check with yourself. See if that works for you. If only you're joining 2 hours and then catching the hour later. So I don't have a strong opinion about this. I would prefer if you do it in one straight go, because there's a gentle build-up which happens. And there may be something I'm mentioning in those 2 hours, which I've talked about in the first hour, and you're getting confused. What did he just say? So that confusion can then be avoided. But then Sanjeev, you have to see how, in your situation, what suits you. Great. Anybody else wants to ask something, share something? You can unmute yourself. We're going to end with a beautiful song that Padmaja has recorded recently. I'm going to share that. Manisha, say something. Manisha Kalra, unmute yourself. Yeah, we can hear you.
Hi, everyone. So I haven't registered for this course what I felt like being here today.
Nice.
And but it is so beautiful, and the music that you play, oh my God, the words. I felt like dancing, like that Krishna thing. And maybe we can have a session when we can really all dance.
You know,
when that music was being played, like I was dancing from inside. So since I've been connected with you, oh my God, what shifts. And I was just typing that I wish to be in energy form with the light body course. So thank you.
To us, even though you're not joining the course, you just tune in and you get the benefits. And just in your own way, you practice.
Yes.
And you'll get all the benefits. Beautiful. So nice.
Thank you so much. And lots of love to everyone.
It's a lovely Krishna painting you have behind you.
Thank you so much.
The idea of uninvited influences makes me uncomfortable. Please advise. This is the reading from Unified. I mean, you don't have to think of them as some, you know, if you get influenced even by a non-invisible things, you know, doesn't the mood of the people in your home influence you? If somebody wakes up in a bad mood, that does impinge on you. Or reading a newspaper article, that can impinge on you. That's an example of an uninvited influence. In other words, your inner being is getting shaken by the state of being of others. So it doesn't have to be some invisible entity is coming and influencing you. Maybe that's what's making you uncomfortable. Right. So if it's true that I do get influenced, and sometimes not in the best way, then in that practice of the book Unified, you're just saying that, you know, I'm going to be only influenced by my higher self. I'm not going to be influenced by all these passing random things. That's the idea. Sounds funny, but what if I feel hungry? Usually happens when I wake up. Drink some water. I like to drink a lot of water, and that's my water therapy. I drink a lot of water in the morning. See if that helps. And if you really need to eat a banana, you do what you need to do. It's all right. Have a little bite to eat if you need to have a banana or something before you start. It's all right. Can I say something? Yeah, go ahead. Anu, go ahead, Anu. You're on mute.
Hi, everyone. Taking on from what Manisha just said about dancing, I think I'll never forget the experience that we all went through in my very first retreat with you, Nikita, at Gurukhana. Padmaja and I from this group were both there. And if you recall, we had a dance session around a bonfire with the local tribal folk. And we just danced with gay abandon. I don't think I've ever danced like that with such energy. And it was purely magical. So yes, dance is a great way of expressing your inner joy and inner being.
So true. Beautiful. Thanks, Anu. That's great. I like how you have memories from that. That was many years now. How many years has it been? First retreat.
2012, April.
Wow.
Yeah, 2012. Nitya, I had shared those pictures with you, remember, recently.
Oh, that's the same retreat that you were also on?
Yes.
Wow, you people
are
first
time I met Padmaja. Yeah. Vinod was there, Padmaja was there. Not bad.
Vinod was also there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Romal is saying, wow, I would like to dance someday with this group. This is becoming have you come to the wrong light body activation does not mean a disco party. So let me play this beautiful song before we end for today. This is a lovely song that Padmaja recently recorded. Like to their own dance, Nadisa. It's called Manasa Sancharare.
Manasa Sancharare. So this is another beautiful, short and sweet composition by Sadashiva Brahmendra. Again, about going inward, about turning our mind inward towards the Brahman. The name of this composition is Manasa Sancharare. Brahmani Manasa Sancharare. मानस संचर रे ब्रह्मणि मानस संचर रे ओ माइंड वेर आर यू वॉन्डरिंग ऑल द टाइम गो विद इन गो पॉन्डर अपॉन द हाइएस्ट upon the Brahman within you. Manasa sancharare Brahmani Manasa sancharare Madashikhi pincha लंकृत चिकुरे मदशिकी पिंचा लंकृत चिकुरे द ब्राह्मण हुज हेयर लॉक्स आर अडोर्न्ड विद द फेदर्स ऑफ अ पीकॉक डांसिंग इन एक्सटेसी मदशिकी पिंचा लंकृत चिकुरे महनीय कपोल विजित मुकुरे एंड हुज चीक्स आर सो रेडियंट आउट शाइनिंग द लस्टर ऑफ अ मिरर गो विद इन Go in search of the Brahman, O mind. Manasa sancharare Brahmani manasa sancharare Shri Ramani kucha दुर्ग विहारे He resides in his consort Lakshmi's bosom and as a wish fulfilling tree he is and all his devotees reside within him Shri Ramani kucha दुर्ग विहारे सेवक जन मंदिर मंदारे परमहंस नुत चंद्र चकोरे एंड हिज फेस इज सो ब्राइट Bright as the full moon and the chakor, the partridge who yearns for the full moon and sings on a full moon night. Paramahamsa mukha chandra chakore paripurita murali ravadhare And sweet music from his flute flowing through the being completes his visage. And this music that will emanate through you when you go within. And you will be a channel for this music to flow through all around you, radiating around. Like the beautiful full moon. O mind, go within. Go within to the Brahman. Paramahamsa mukha chandra chakore paripurita murali ravadare चर रे ए
How beautiful. Thank you, Padmaja. So beautifully sung and explained. So this reminds me, I think it's a quote by Hafiz, I'm not sure, but one of my favorite quotes. It says, I am the hole in the flute. I am the hole in the flute. Krishna's breath flows through. Listen to the music. I am the hole in the flute. Love's breath flows through. Listen to the music. I am the hole in the flute. Life's breath moves through. Listen to the music. So our job is to become the hole, empty. When you become empty like that, then life's breath moves through. Like that song we heard earlier. Who is in my temple? Who is in my temple? The doors are opening, the lights are lighting. And darkness is flying away like a dark bird. And there's no one in the temple, but still the lights are getting lit, the doors are opening. So how beautiful is that? So let this light body activation course be a shedding experience, shedding of our misperceptions, of our assumptions, of all the burden we've been carrying. And let us be reborn like Angulimala into the noble life, the holy life. Life of ease, life of flow, life of trust, life of grace, where without any volition, non-volitionally, everything happens. There's a lovely, Goenkaji used to say, Jo bin mange hi mile, to atulit sukh hoy. Jo bin mange. So without asking, you were given. You had a heart wish, but you never asked for it. And without even asking, in fact, you didn't even have a heart wish. You didn't even know what your heart wished for. But that was given to you. Your heart's wish was fulfilled without your even articulating it. So, atulita sukahoy. So, this is a much higher happiness than you making a vision board and manifesting it. Right? The happiness of being given without even asking for it. And then all you can have is gratitude. Here's the gratitude. All right, everybody. So we are going to now, we'll be in touch on our group and further instructions there. And we will meet you on the 4th of September, 4 a.m. India time. Chal. You can say goodbye on the way out. I'm unmuting everybody.
Bye. Thank you,
Nitya.
Bye.
Thank you.
Everybody.
Thank you so much for the session. Have a great day. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.